Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. Ashok Roy is Chief Medical Officer of Caravan Health. It's an ACO organization, and we're going to find out a little bit about Caravan today and maybe some insights into ACOs. So thanks again for making the time.
My pleasure.
So let's just... for folks who don't know Caravan, and if you're not deep into the ACO world, you probably wouldn't. Could you thumbnail Caravan for us? I in reading some of the material on your website and some press releases, it seems that you have a strategy that is built on scale, that these accountable care organizations and value-based contracting, that sort of a necessary ingredient is a fair number of members' lives. Have I got the right end of the stick?
Well, yes, but it's all in context, right? So let me describe two concepts, which I'm sure you are very familiar with, you know, and your listeners. Number one is like population health, value-based contracting, and then how does that relate to Caravan and why we exist? You know, what is our passion? So in a nutshell, population health is making sure we can manage an entire group of individuals, almost like whether they like it or not, right? We are responsible for the healthcare of these individuals. Now, in value-based care, they kind of go hand in hand, because if you do that well, that not only do you manage these patients well, they have better outcomes and better quality. People who do that well should be rewarded, right? Because in essence, yes, they're decreased utilization, increasing health improvements, right? This is the basis for all value-based contracting and, you know, a lot of your other questions later on. But what does Caravan do? Now, its roots, you know, through the founder Lynn Barr, and they really focus on initially rural clients, right? So there's a lot of clients that wanted to participate in these shared savings structures from CMS, but number one, they were too small, right? There's a minimum size of 5,000 patients. So, well, how can I participate? I believe in this concept. How do I participate, right? Because I'm not eligible per se. Number two is they get it, but they're scared because unlike more urban centers, their margin's very small, right? They don't have extra reserves. And the fear of actually not doing well and having to pay back money, which could be, you know, it's detrimental for everyone, but much more detrimental for a rural client is number two. So they don't know exactly how it works, what are the drivers, how do they get this implemented, how do they be successful in it, right? So I think this is where Caravan came about. It's like, okay, how do we help these individuals across multiple states actually participate, and not just participate, but do it well? And in the end, again, improving the health of their population through population health and being successful. And part of it is grouping it together so you could be eligible, but getting the right mix, it's a little bit of a risk adjustments, right? Just like insurance, you get the right mix of individuals. Yes, something bad may happen to certain individuals in your group, but it's not going to be a catastrophic event. And I think through that model, I mean, you've seen for the last 6 years, we've not had to repay any shared savings. We've generated shared savings and we distributed this. And it really, we're hoping to encourage more value-based contracting, because especially during this time of COVID where people are losing, they were losing resources, right? Part financial, part other things, which we could get onto later on. But you know, when we distribute the share savings for this year, a lot of times like this is the money we need to keep that extra nurse, right?
So I heard two things in your response. One is that Caravan aggregated providers because some of them were too small to meet the eligibility standard to enter into the CMS Medicare Shared Savings Program, that you had to have 5,000 patients' lives, you know, however you want to characterize it, but 500 people. And some of them didn't have that number. So it was sort of a function of the rules of the program. But there's also sort of an insurance dynamic at play here, and that you need a certain scale for the same reason you need a certain scale with insurance, because if you have you're sort of spreading risk, and if you have an expensive patient or something, or 12 expensive patients, that if you have a large number of people that you're covering, you can take that on. So it seems that those are the two fundamental factors at play, right?
That is correct. The only correction is what we deal is with the hospital or hospital system, right? Yes, they're made out of providers, but you know, there's independent physician groups. They're much more common in urban areas, but in the rural areas, they're much more attached to the hospitals. They're intricate. So it's, we deal with the hospital, these community hospitals, these rural hospitals, these FQHCs, you know, to be successful. And you're right about the second point. We kind of found once we aggregate to 100,000 lives, the swings of risk can definitely be mitigated. And so what that does is a little bit of confidence. Like, not only have we done this well, but we have other individuals like you. And you may have a couple patients who are risky, but when you put them in this giant pool, you know, it's not going to be a deterrent to participating in population health and value-based contracting.
So is Caravan operating in the background here, and in terms of the entities that held up against the financial metrics and some of the quality metrics, that you are helping them reach those metrics, but you're sort of, is Caravan itself contracting with CMS, and are the 12 Caravan, I believe there are 12 different ACOs that you've organized and aggregated these providers. Where are you situated with respect to the arrangements with CMS and maybe some other payers?
Of course. So we're actually consolidating down to 3 to 4 ACOs, right? So number one, the barriers to entry, right? Applying for the application, getting approval, yes, we take care of that, because obviously we have the experience, and that's one of the reasons why our clients reach out to us who want to participate. Okay, that kind of paperwork, logistics in the beginning, aggregating, dialing, submitting, yes. But we're not just behind the hands like, great, you're in, go at it. It really is looking, and this kind of goes into what we're trying to do, is using our data and analytics and expertise to be like, okay, let's look at you. How can we improve? And again, when we improve, we're not myopic where we're just looking at those in your shared savings programs. It's actually going to affect, a lot of it will affect all your patients, right? So here are workflows, standards that you should be doing that will affect the operations of your clinic, because we want you to be successful. And then to take advantage of it, and you feel comfortable, yes. Should you do more value-based contracts in your commercial population on that? Yes. But for right now, it's more a front-facing with the clients, but we also do the administrative task for being right in an ACO.
I just want to ask one more question in this area, and I'm wondering whether you've taken this sort of question before, or whether you've even thought of it yourself. is Caravan and other entities like it, from a certain perspective, couldn't you be viewed as yet another middleman in healthcare? You're not, you know, providing care directly. You are sort of helping on the administrative side of things. And do we need yet another middleman in healthcare?
So I, I'm going to disagree on you in that part. So yes, maybe my description wasn't going into the operations, but let me give you an example. So we have launched a COPD program, right? So dealing with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And so theoretically right now, a clinic who's not involved with us, they know who their patients are, they outreach to them. They, you know, hopefully have an interaction, and their goal is to prevent unnecessary inpatient admissions, ER visits, right? Great. This is how we're getting involved. And so this is where I'm going to say, is this truly just a middle person? So we give the list like, okay, here's your 100 COPD patients. Actually, because of claims phase, actually these 20, they probably don't have COPD. They probably have these other diagnoses. So let's not focus on them. Here is your higher risk patients. These ones are confirmed diagnosis, right? And with our data that looks at claims, looks at potential EMR data if they have the feeds, right? This is the group. Now, here's a program that we recommend. With it, here's the education that you just start off with. Here are the touch points. And we're going to send on your behalf a text message every day or every other day, depending on the risk. Just ask them, how's your breathing? Right? When that message comes back, we alert the client. So this is where we're shifting. And this is kind of where the future of what we're doing this year. Healthcare is really a pull model, right? Hey, patient, if you need help, you contact us and we're going to help you out. It's the entire basis for a fee-for-service. We don't look out for work, right? I want to change it to a push service. It's like checking in on your relatives, right? You could tell your relatives or your mother, your children, just call me when you need help. I'm going to help you out. You know you are. But do you take the initiative to reach out and be like, hey, how are things going? Do you need help? Right? That is a fundamental population care. Like, we want to make sure you're well. We're going to keep better touches on you. But in these rural places, they have one nurse, right? So the one nurse is nearing the clinic. They're like, I can't outreach to these 300 people. So it's like, we're going to help you on your behalf so that we are able to do the outreaches. You're not doing cold calls, but we get you a list of like, you know what? These are the three people you need to call today, right? So a very short prescriptive task list, right? And again, they couldn't afford to do it by themselves, right? To buy these things, but we're able to integrate it well. So in that way, we're not just a middleman to say like, you know, great, we're going to take a cut and that's it. It's really, we're going to help you better manage your patients through technology and data and practice transformation.
Yeah, so not a middleman, but a provider of technology and related services that improve the quality of care.
A partner, that's what I like to call it.
Partner. Changing focus just a little bit. I did see your tagline on Twitter, which is population health is a great revenue generator. Yeah, we said it. Now I know, you know, Twitter, you want to do things that draw a little bit of attention and that drew my attention. So kudos.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. But what did you mean by that? Or what do you mean by that?
Okay. So in a fee-for-service world, throughput is what's most important, right? See as many patients, you get paid this amount. The more patients you see, the more revenue you're given. It's not tied to whether that visit was helpful, not helpful, there was intervention, right? It's complete throughput. In population health, what we learned, just in general, is that some people just need extra time, extra care, extra touches, right? But in a fee-for-service world, you just don't get reimbursed for that at all. So this is where CMS has helped out. We understand to do this well, you need to outreach more. How do we make sure that you're not losing out, right? Just pure sacrificing by doing these outreaches. If you're going to have a 45-minute appointment with someone, how do we make sure that you're reimbursed partly for that? Not as lucrative as a fee-for-service, like if you had seen six patients during that time, but something which is comparable. So by doing that, it's really like you're not losing out, right? CMS is helping out because they realize that to provide good service, to move the needle, you need investment. So here are some services that you can do, and you will get reimbursed for this. Care management, right? And again, it's not taking away from the provider time, but you're supporting staff. Care management, you know, telephonic outreaches, other interventions. So I think that's what it really means. Because making that shift from fee-for-service to value-based contract, it's tough because 80% of your panel may be fee-for-service. And you're comfortable with that, right? And especially if you're successful, why do you even want to make the shift?
Let me just challenge you on that just a little bit for the purposes of a good conversation. So when I read that, I thought the way you would want it processed is, dear provider, you can make money doing this. That, you know, generate revenue. You can make money doing this. And that when you said, yeah, we said it, you're saying like, this is good for your bottom line. This is good for the amount of money you're going to take home.
So shared savings, right? You generate shared savings. If you improve patient care, you meet the quality and all that. You do that well, that's a net thing. And you get rewarded for that through your shared savings. That's not a bad thing, right? So yeah, manage your patients better, improve them as a whole. You will also get rewarded too. I don't see anything.
Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to put the hammer on the nail or whatever. Okay. So my understanding is that Caravan principle participation in value-based care has been through the CMS Medicare Shared Savings Program. And I'm not sure whether you've been in one-sided or two-sided risk or some combination thereof, but just a global question. What, first of all, is my understanding correct that that's been your principal avenue into value-based care and as an accountable care organization? But what do you see going on with MSSP, and, you know, are there changes coming in 2022 that are going to mean significant changes to the program that might have an effect on Caravan Health and other ACO organizations?
So the changes we see from CMMI, CMS in general, is going more towards, again, population health, value-based contract. They want, you know, by a certain time, everyone's in value-based contracting. That is completely consistent with what we want to do. Now, what we see is kind of pushes towards that, right? So since we've been doing this and we believe in it and we feel, you know, we've been successful in it, this is just encouraging more people to do it. Now, for those, again, who have questions about the drivers, how to make successful, how to get buy-in, this is where we're a partner for that. So there's nothing new coming out that is necessarily going to be...
Programmatic tweaks or, you know, new changes to the benchmarking or all the kind of, you know, the nitty gritty of it.
Not really. Because the way we see it is, how aggressive do you want to be in the risk, right? And that's part of it. If you do it well, should you go into greater upside and downside? Yes, right? So the way we form our ACOs is there'll be some clients who are like, you are doing great. You've implemented stuff. We've seen the data, right? Your patient outcomes are great. It's a recommendation. Do you want to do this, you know, for the rest? Because when we do it, it's a partnership. We take risk. They take risk, right? And so we need to have that very frank conversation. And that's where this group, you know, we have over 300 clients. This group may be better to go in a more aggressive form versus a less aggressive form.
But right? When you talk to your 300 groups, is this caravan sort of, do you have your own sort of program in terms of putting people at different risk levels, higher risk, you know, higher savings, but also greater risk of shared losses if they don't meet the benchmark? So you have your own system that you sort of, so you have maybe 50 practices at this level and 100 practices at this level, or is it a question of taking the tracks that CMS has promulgated and putting your member organizations on different tracks? Do you follow me?
I do. So there's a little bit of that. So obviously a client may come in like, I want to do this. Great. Again, because we're a partner and we're both at risk, it's having like, great, we have these assessments. We do our due diligence and be like, that's great. Maybe in 2 years, or we could tweak this so that we could better prepare you, right? They may say, we want to go in complete risk. And we'd be like, we have better options, but if you're hell bent, I'm not sure if I can say that word, on doing it, maybe this isn't the right partnership, but we'll help you develop that glide path to get there. It's, and even as a company, you know, maybe we start off a little bit conservative, but I think looking at our data, seeing things, we are becoming a little bit more aggressive. Like there's a group, right? And that's why we're constantly reshifting our ACOs. Here's a group of practices that has adopted our model, has the buy-in needed, has the culture that's consistent with being a little bit more aggressive. And so guess what? This ACO is going on to a greater risk than these other two ACOs. And within it, there's a little bit of a mix, right? You have to find, there's no right formula, but the ones who are new, but are on a right trajectory versus the ones that are consistent, you have that mix to create these ACOs. So, you know, we had 20 ACOs, we went to 12, you know what I mean? The number is fluid, but we talked to our clients, it's a group activity. We're going to do what's best for you, right? But there may be changes year to year on which ACO you are, but that's the only thing that changes in, you know what I mean? Your mind, the same programs, support, recommendations will remain the same regardless of whatever ACO you're in.
There's a new model out there now, the direct contracting model. I think there are 30 some participants, something like that. Is the direct contracting model complementary to the ACO model? Are you getting into that, or is it a correction to it? How do you view it and put it in relief with the ACO model?
Of course. So direct contracting, again, fundamentally, as we talked about, CMS wants more individuals going into value-based care. The direct contracting model, when you look at the spectrum of how aggressive you want to be, is kind of in that more aggressive model, right? Because it takes parts of the MSSP model, shared savings, part in the MA model, right? It's almost like a little bit of a bridge between the two. And then some commercial aspects. So it's for individuals who want to take more risk, right? Not the MA side, but you know, it definitely a bridge between the MSSP and MA. We're definitely looking into it. There are some clients who definitely have expressed interest. And it's looking at, will this work for you? You know what I mean? And you will be successful in that. So
why do we need the direct contracting model? What what problem is it solving that the ACO model didn't solve?
That's a little tough. And Tim Groninger, our CEO, you know, is much more adept at this, but it's just another, so CMS, I guess over its last 10 years has had like 30 models and they have the, it is hard to say, how do I get buy-in? You know, you may create a model, but if it's too complex, people can't follow it. You know, if it doesn't give enough incentives, they don't, right? But some protection. So it's a little bit tweaking of, will this work? So, but they're all variations. I mean, when you look at it fundamentally, you're like, how is this different? It's this percentage of shared savings a little bit better here. This, you know what I mean? Or a little bit more flexibility. But fundamentally, I'm like, we're just focusing on the fundamentals. Again, that just leads to how aggressive we want to be.
You are chief medical officer. So let's pivot a little bit. We've been talking sort of the business side or, you know, the dollars and cents side. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some clinical issues. So what are your sort of challenges going into 2022 in terms of sort of the clinical issues that your clients are facing? You referenced the COPD program as sort of an illustration. I'm not sure whether that is something that's new that you're rolling out or whether, you know, or perhaps there are some COVID-19 issues that you are addressing now that we seem to be headed towards a sort of an endemic version of the virus.
So what we're facing overall is our clients before COVID, right? If we're talking about the more community health areas, they were always struggling with recruitment and staffing and getting best talent and retaining best talent. That was always an issue. COVID-19 just exacerbated that, right? So they're finding, great, due to certain reasons, burnout, mandates, things like that, people are quitting. 6% of my workforce quit, 10% of my workforce quit. I can't recruit, right? Because traveling nursing is so lucrative, right? I can't even get a nurse in my clinic. So A, it's just realizing we understand this, right? So my job and my passion part is, how can I leverage our tools, our analytics, to make you work smarter, right? So that I don't need you. I mean, yes, if you had more bandwidth, all that, great, you had an extra person, but how do I make best use if you could give me 2 hours to make the most impact you can, right? So it really is leveraging the technology. We talked about the push versus pull model, right? Identify the right patient at the right time with the right intervention. The second whole aspect of that is, we always believed in team-based care. So take away all the technology. Forget, you don't even want to involve with that. How do we leverage your team to be effective, right? And this kind of goes into the issue at COVID-19. So when we did a deeper dive of why your staff is leaving, part of it is burnout. Part of it is money. Part of it is actually no growth path, right? You're an MA or a medical assistant in a clinic. If you're kind of put in that role, you're like, what's your next step? Do I just stay in MA? Because if there's no career path, if there's another client that's offering you $200 an hour, guess what? You're going to take it. But if you invest in your staff, right? So first of all, I always say, show appreciation, right? Make them feel like they're part of a bigger group with a bigger mission. That's important. And that's not a healthcare thing. That's everything. But number two, one of our programs, simple, fundamental, team-based documentation. I see a patient. Patient comes into the clinic. The nurse sees the clinic or the patient first. They write a note, full note. Great. I read it. Totally great. I see the patient. Guess what? I write a full note. Kind of says the same thing in the beginning parts, right? And obviously, I write more a plan, which they don't. But I've wasted this time redocumenting something that's there, right? So now if I say, okay, I'm going to leverage this, but I'm going to up-train my MA. Say, you know what? That patient came in for shortness of breath. These are kind of the three questions you need to ask and kind of document those negatives. So you're investing the time in your staff. They're doing a better job. And guess what? That saves you time later on. And that's just one example. It's make them feel appreciated, needed, that they're doing things and they're moving their skill set on. And that will help with your retention. Also, plus you'll be able to handle more patients, you know? So that team-based care, it really is our foundation.
So how are you promulgating this or communicating this? Are you using some of the conventional tools like webinars and such? I mean, how are you
message.
Yeah, how are you teaching this?
So we learn when we go to one modality, doesn't work. You have to hear a message 3, 4, 5 times before it really sinks in. So one way we've done this is obviously through our staff. So we have 4 connections to each clinic, right? There's one person who is the main point of contact. And when they do that initial assessment of what's going on in the clinic, they really said, okay, do I need to work on the foundational stuff? Are they more advanced, right? And so again, all the programs have the team-based care, but it really is doing that message there. So that's one thing. And there's multiple touch points with that. Number two, there's a point of contact that looks at the hospital system level, right? So great. I have someone at the clinic level, someone at the hospital level, the administrative level saying, this is important. This is best practice. And this is beneficial, not only to the patient outcomes, but also, you know what I mean, to the end game. So this is the message that's going through. Number three, we also have a series where we just focus on the clinic level providers in a separate forum to teach them about population health, show them comparative data. And I'll really emphasize, like, you know, by doing this, this benefits you also, right? Saves you time because, you know, I still see patients and writing notes, it's a time suck. You know what I mean? And if I could save that, I'd rather invest it in my staff. So it's different modalities. Plus we do have webinars, forums, but it's repeating the same message. But not only that, but if you believe in it, how do we operationalize it? And so that's where our programs are not just philosophically aligned, it's operation. And since we have 300 clients, we have a client that looks and acts like you. These were the challenges we felt. This is how we're going to address it. So I think that's the biggest strength. I mean, 300 clients, it's crazy great. And we do learn a lot from our clients. So they influence the development of our program also.
Interesting. And how do you avoid the psychology that you're the, you know, the outside managers telling people what to do and to do more with, you know, fewer nurses or fewer MA? I mean, some of this might be greeted with skepticism, maybe, and a little bit of frustration if people feel like they've been running around trying to cope with, you know, the same number of patients with but far fewer nurses or other sorts of staff or even physicians. So how do you cope with that? That, geez, this sounds great, but what I really need is another nurse. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, so we got that, right? So when it's a, so first of all, do you believe in the philosophy of it, right? And they say, yes, we do. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, we have a client in the Northeast, they believe in it, like we get it. We just don't have the staff to do it, right? So our thing is we always want the clinics to be independent because we're saying, even though we're helping you on this subset of patients, it's the same principle for all your patients. So guess what? Use it across all your patients. But it's really, hey, is this a temporary issue, right? You know, we're not a recruiting firm, like for nurses, don't get me wrong. But the interim, what do you have? Let's work with what you do have and let's help make that person most effective. So that's really the philosophy. And in rural health, this is what we have to do. And that's why it's not a technology push. We're not a vendor to push these things. It's, okay, you have 3 hours to devote to population health to this group. Fine. You're going to get a task list of people to contact. We already told them you're going to contact them. right? And this is the reason why you're going to contact them. So this is, so getting tasks, and they may be like, great. For clients who are much larger and able to do it, yes, we have a little bit of a different model, but the fundamentals are the same. We're going to adapt to what you have. And again, for those small players, it's, we get it, we understand, and that's why we're going to help you out this way. And part of it is, if they just hired us and we have no skin in the game, yeah, it's going to be like, great. Our internal incentives are completely aligned to their incentives, right? So it's a lose-lose if we lose, but it's a win-win if we win. And so that's why our team's really like, how do we reimagine ourselves to do better? And that's where we're like, a little bit of higher touch, a little bit higher technology. So we invested in a little bit of a growth strategy for ourselves.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.